Have you ever stopped to consider how a single element, something like fire, can carry such, well, such profound and varied meanings across different stories and times?
It's really something, isn't it?
We often just see it as destructive, right?
Yeah.
Purely destructive.
Yeah, that's the default, maybe.
But what if it's also, a guide or a messenger or even a symbol of something deeply sacred?
Exactly. It's truly remarkable how one thing can be seen in so many ways. Its significance just shifts dramatically depending on the context, you know?
Absolutely. So today we're taking a deep dive into the powerful and sometimes pretty surprising symbolism of fire, flames, and torches as we see them in a collection of foundational ancient texts. And this isn't just like a study of an element. It's more of a journey that shows fire not just as a force, but almost as a dynamic character, playing these pivotal roles in some really early and impactful narratives.
Right.
We've gathered insights from passages in Genesis, Exodus, Deuteronomy, Judges, and 1 Kings. Foundational stuff.
And our mission today really is to unpack these sources. We want to pull out the most important nuggets, explore the different ways fire shows up, you know, from protection and divine presence to guidance and even its absence, which is really interesting.
Yeah, that absence part is key later on.
We'll see how fire is used to mark boundaries, reveal immense power, and even, well, communicate with the divine.
Exactly. So get ready for some real aha moments, I think, as we trace these fiery threads. By the end of this deep dive, hopefully you'll have a new appreciation for how symbols evolve and what these ancient stories can tell us about perception and meaning.
Yeah.
We'll even explore what it means when that expected, powerful symbol like fire is sometimes just, well, just a precursor, maybe not the main event.
Sets the stage.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Right. So starting right at the beginning, Genesis 3:24. This is right after humanity is driven out of the Garden of Eden. The text says, "These powerful angelic beings, cherubim, and a flaming sword which turned every way were placed east of the garden, and specifically to keep the way of the tree of life."
Wow. So right away, fire is a
A
barrier.
definitive barrier. And what's fascinating is how it's immediately set up not just as an element, but as this active dynamic boundary. It's like an impassable line.
Yeah.
It really sets a precedent for fire as a symbol of divine decree and maybe consequence too.
So more than just, a physical wall, it's a fiery guard almost,
Exactly, a sentinel.
protecting sacred space,
Yeah.
setting up that divide between sacred and profane right from the get-go. Okay, so how does that role carry through when we get to Exodus? Because there we find one of the most iconic images, right? The burning bush.
Oh, absolutely. Exodus 3:2. The angel of the Lord appears in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush.
Right.
And the crucial part, the bit everyone remembers, is that the bush burned with fire and the bush was not consumed.
Which is just mind-bending.
It really is. This introduces fire as a direct manifestation of the divine presence, but in a way that completely defies natural law.
Right. Fire burns things. That's what it does.
Exactly. But here, the fact the bush isn't consumed, that highlights the miraculous, the supernatural nature of this encounter. It grabs your attention, but it doesn't destroy what it touches.
Huh. So this fire transforms without consuming.
You could say that, yeah. It hints at a divine power working outside our usual understanding. It signifies not annihilation, but this profound, almost paradoxical presence.
That idea of presence without annihilation, that's really profound, isn't it?
It
Does
is.
that imply a different kind of power than we usually associate with fire?
Yeah.
And how does that sort of evolve as we move through these texts?
Because the divine presence doesn't stop there,
That's
right?
not all.
In Exodus 13, fire becomes a constant guide. It says, "The Lord went before them by day in a pillar of a cloud, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light." Yeah, this pillar of fire was a continuous presence, never taken away. And that's remarkable from a fixed barrier like in Genesis or a single miracle like the bush
Right.
to this dynamic ongoing guide. If you connect it to the bigger story, it's not just a fleeting divine moment, but active providential leadership. It's literally lighting the way through darkness, providing guidance and protection in the wilderness, unwavering.
Unwavering. And then the power of fire just ramps up even more at Mount Sinai, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely. Exodus 19:1 gives this vivid picture. Mount Sinai, all together on a smoke, because the Lord descended upon it in fire,
Wow.
and the smoke went up as the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mountain quaked greatly. Just imagine seeing that.
Hard to even picture. And then in Exodus 24:17, the sight of the Lord's glory on the mountain is described as being like devouring fire to the Israelites watching below.
Devouring fire. That phrase itself is powerful.
Yeah. This really intense manifestation of fire seems to set the stage for how we might expect divine power to appear, you know? Big, dramatic, fiery.
Absolutely. It creates an expectation. But, as we'll get to, those expectations, well, they sometimes get beautifully overturned.
Right. But sticking with Sinai for a moment, that idea of devouring fire or consuming fire, it comes up again, doesn't it?
It does. Deuteronomy 4.24 and later echoed in Hebrews 12.29, it directly states, "For the Lord thy God is a consuming fire."
Okay, a consuming fire. What does that really mean, though? Is it just destruction?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? It certainly implies immense power, but it could also suggest a purifying, all-encompassing holiness, a power that burns away impurity, demands reverence. It might define the nature of divine presence rather than just being about literal destruction.
Okay, so holiness, purification. That's a powerful interpretation. But, I mean, if you're hearing that for the first time, it could also sound pretty terrifying, couldn't it?
Oh, undoubtedly. There's definitely an element of awe, maybe even fear, mixed in with the reverence. That dual nature seems important.
Yeah. And interestingly, Deuteronomy adds another crucial detail about this experience at Horeb, another name for Sinai, right?
Correct.
Deuteronomy 4.15 warns the people, "Take ye therefore good heed unto yourselves, for ye saw no manner of similitude on the day that the Lord spake unto you in Horeb out of the midst of the fire." No similitude, no form.
Exactly. And again, in Deuteronomy 5.4, the Lord talked with you face to face in the mount out of the midst of the fire.
So, talked from the fire, but wasn't seen in the fire.
That's the pivotal point. It emphasizes that while the divine presence was powerfully felt and communication happened from the fire,
right,
there was no visual form or likeness of God seen within it. The fire was the medium, the context for the communication, not a picture of the divine. It really underscores that the experience was about the power and the voice from the fire, not a tangible image, demanding reverence without needing a visual shape.
That's a really important distinction. Okay, so from that intense formless presence at Sinai, fire's role shifts again dynamically when we get to the book of Judges.
Judges 13.
Here, we see fire used almost as a vehicle for a divine messenger, an angel.
Mm-hmm.
Manoah and his wife are talking to someone they don't realize is an angel.
They think he's just a man of God initially.
Yeah. And the angel tells them if they make a burnt offering, offer it to the Lord. And then this extraordinary thing happens in verse 20.
It's quite a scene. When the flame went up toward heaven from off the altar, that the angel of the Lord ascended in the flame of the altar.
Ascended in flame.
In the flame itself. This is another really profound use of fire. It's not just presence, it's a means of transition, a conduit between realms almost.
Like a gateway.
Exactly. The angel ascends in the flame, sort of dissolving back into it. It reveals this deep link between fire and the divine realm. And right after Manoah finally gets it, he realizes he'd seen an angel and he's terrified, saying, "We shall surely die because we have seen God."
So it clearly links that fiery ascent to a direct, awe-inspiring, maybe even dangerous encounter with the divine.
Definitely. The awe is palpable.
Okay, so we've tracked fire as a barrier, a miraculous presence, a guiding light, a terrifying power that speaks, and now like a vehicle for ascension.
Quite a range already.
Yeah. We've seen it signify huge power and direct divine interaction. But here's where it gets really counterintuitive, I think, when we get to 1 Kings.
Ah, yes. Elijah on Horeb, 1 Kings 19.
This feels like a profound departure from everything we've just mapped out.
It really does. So the prophet Elijah is on Mount Horeb, same place as Moses, significantly waiting for the Lord. And we read in verses 11 and 12. Well, maybe you should read it.
Okay. "The Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind rent the mountains and brake in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a still small voice."
But the Lord was not in the fire.
Yeah, that's huge, isn't it? Almost shocking after everything else. After all the dramatic, powerful fire we've talked about, Sinai, the pillar, the angel's ascent here, this incredibly intense moment. The divine presence isn't in the fire.
It's explicitly not there.
It's in something subtle, quiet, that comes after the fire. And the source material we look at even clarifies this point, right? It says something like, "Here God, through one of his angels, met with Elijah."
Yes, that's an important clarification from the source itself. It wasn't God directly in the voice, but God speaking through an angel after all the elemental displays.
So the angel is in the still small voice, not the fire.
Precisely. And this is such a crucial point for understanding the symbolism, maybe the most surprising insight of all. Fire here is presented as a precursor.
Like stage setting.
Exactly, a dramatic stage setter, rather than the final act, the ultimate revelation. This subversion of expectation is critical. It forces us to reconsider our assumptions about where true power or meaning really lies.
Right.
Sometimes, maybe the most profound truth isn't in the big, loud, overwhelming spectacle.
Like the earthquake or the fire?
Yeah. But in the quiet, unexpected moment that follows, conveyed perhaps more subtly, like through an angel in that still small voice.
Wow. Okay, so let's try and synthesize this a bit. We've journeyed through burning bushes that aren't consumed.
Right. Pillars of fire guiding a whole nation.
The totally awe-inspiring sight of mountains covered in flame.
Even angels ascending in fiery offerings.
Yeah. We saw fire as this consuming force, a marker of divine glory, a powerful presence that God spoke from.
But then our sources give us this fascinating twist. They remind us that the most powerful presence isn't always in the most obvious or, you know, the most dramatic form.
Right. Elijah's story. After the wind, the earthquake, and the fire, the divine communication through an angel was in that still small voice.
The sources making that clarification about the angel is key, too. It wasn't a direct theophany in the voice, but mediated.
Which raises a really important question, doesn't it? What does it mean when the expected powerful symbol like fire is just a precursor, just setting the stage, rather than being the ultimate revelation itself?
It challenges our expectations about divine encounters.
Definitely. So thinking about this, what does this all mean for you listening right now? If fire can be both this incredibly powerful sign of presence and just a dramatic stage setter for a much subtler truth, What other elements, maybe in your own life or experiences, might be signaling something profound, not maybe in their obvious flashy display, but in what they lead to, what they prepare you for?
That's a great question to ponder. What follows the fire in our lives?
Yeah. What do you think is the real consuming fire when it comes to the quest for understanding? Something to think about.
If you enjoyed this study and would like to learn more, please go to revelationwithdaniel.com and search for Angels Studies. You will find a growing list of this type of podcasts.